Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts, Alex Croson. I'm alongside the incredible Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson. It's me, Casey Clapp.
Wow. We've never had this sort of confrontation this early on.
We've always been so smooth at the very beginning. I never talked over you. You never talked over me.
That's right.
We're going downhill. We're like at the bottom of that toilet bowl, and the spin gets really fast before it shoots out.
A hallmark of our podcast is that we don't speak over each other.
Exactly.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody does. We probably lost so many listeners. They're so turned off. What are we
going to
do next?
We're still doing it. What the fuck?
Sorry.
I can feel my mustache against the microphone. It's driving me insane.
Don't let it drive you insane. Steer into it and grow your mustache bigger.
All right.
Yeah, you're actually, for those of you who aren't here, Alex is about 3 inches away from the microphone. That's how big his mustache is. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, and it grows straight out.
It does. It's kind of like, Yosemite Sam of the cartoon era.
Yeah.
It's like that, except all the way around and pointing perfectly horizontal.
Yeah, it's like Saturn's rings.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Man, you could get on a mustache calendar if you grew out your mustache and made it go into a entire ring around your head.
I think I could get on a list somewhere.
Yeah, probably, of incredible, incredible mustaches.
Not quite.
There's a list. I used to get that calendar when I was like in high school. No, it was more like college. Yeah, college.
Of good mustaches.
Yeah, there's like the World Mustache Competition. You should definitely look this up.
My friend Josh won the Portland Beard Competition.
What?
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, these people have these like incredible stashes and beards. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, you just, I don't know. I'm a fan of facial hair. I think it's really great as one who like can pathetically grow something considered a mustache.
Casey, we have some business to take care of up top in this episode.
We sure does.
So here's the deal to all of our Fungal Associates. Our platform for publishing this podcast is called Anchor. It is by Spotify.
Oh.
It's their podcast publishing platform, their PPP. They gave us the opportunity to opt into a program where they place ads into our podcast, and we got, you know, a few cents for every one that was played. And we thought, we were young and dumb. This was 3 months ago.
Wow.
we thought, yeah, that sounds great. I don't see any downsides. Casey.
Yes.
Yesterday, you texted me and you said, we have a Nespresso ad.
God.
And I thought you had auto-corrected something. And I said, Nespresso?
Yeah, big question. I think you had two question marks.
Yeah. And no, we did not have an Nespresso ad. Psych. Yes, we do, apparently.
What?
Recorded not by us, but by a third party.
I don't even know what that sounds like. Like, whenever I listen to our show, it's through the app, like, to listen, like, hear what it sounds like, and
right.
be like, well, that one sounds good enough. Let's just press play.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so this was from, this is from Hannah, she listens through Spotify. I don't know. I guess the question really that what we're bringing up, I guess, is we have no idea what these ads are.
Yeah, which was startling for us.
A little bit.
We don't like that. We don't support Nespresso.
No, honestly, we don't support Nestle.
Yeah,
Nestle. By accident.
So we don't support Nespresso. We don't support having that ad on our podcast. We are in talks with our Anchor rep to remove that program from our podcast. We're not interested anymore because we didn't know that we wouldn't have any say in the ads that they were going to put on our show.
We also can't see what they are. Like,
yeah,
we can say, oh, here's our ad spot.
Right.
And they don't even say, oh, for this one we put in here. Like, they're targeted, I guess, towards, you know, individual people. To which Hannah said, wait, Spotify thinks that I like Nespresso, I'd be a good candidate?
Yeah.
To which I replied, no. Spotify knows you'd be a good candidate.
Yeah, targeted ads are funny. So
yeah.
we're gonna solve that, and we're sorry that if you heard an ad and you were morally offended by it, we're taking care of it, and
we're gonna get it figured out.
That's right.
And we're open to other ads. So if you guys know some great spot that you'd like, oh, this is a really cool company, we'd love to see them here. That's what we're doing. Because, you know, we have a platform. We want to share opportunities with great other things that we can.
That's right.
So, yeah. Well, we're getting it figured out. But also, it is a form of support for the podcast. So it's a delicate balance. We're walking the line.
Yeah. I think we have a right as creators to make money off of our art.
As most people should, I think.
Yeah, I think all creators should. But I don't want to make it that way.
Yeah, right? I don't want to make it off the back of Nestle.
Yeah.
They routinely steal water.
They are particularly evil. Speaking of a particular kind of evil, Casey, we are talking about a very interesting tree today.
Yes, we are.
With an ironic name, perhaps.
I know. Ugh, it totally is, and I hear it every single time.
Yeah. Well, I thought I was being very clever when I suggested a title for this episode. I said, hey, what about Tree of Hell?
Yeah, and we all were like, murp, murp,
and Casey murp. Was like, yeah, I've heard that before.
Biggest eye roll. You could feel my eye roll on the Richter scale in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how big it was.
You know, like most of us work in an industry, and all industries have their sort of inside
things.
That's
true. I did this to you, didn't I?
Yeah.
What did I do? I said, oh, we should start a video with saying, oh, hey, I didn't see you there.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I didn't see you there is the Tree of Hell equivalent of the video industry.
You know what? I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
Regret it.
It was a good moment of clarity. I thought, oh, wow, yeah, I'm an idiot about trees in the same way that, well, I won't
Casey's
call you an idiot.
An idiot. I'll call myself it for you about making creative things.
Well, here we are to talk about Tree of Heaven.
The Tree of Heaven. Alianthus altissima.
One more time.
Alianthus.
Alianthus.
Altissima.
Altissima.
Yes, that's the one.
What a mouthful.
I know, isn't it? It's actually kind of an, I like the flow of it. Alianthus altissima.
I've already forgotten it. Alianthus.
Altissima.
Altissima.
Yes, altissima being like the height, like the
Altitude.
Ultimate. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Okay. So I think it, what is it? The high or tallest from alta, high, is in altitude.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's because the branches, the tree does get tall, but also the tips of its branches kind of point upwards. I've heard both things, read and heard both things as a reason for why they call it that, the tree of heaven.
Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through a forest. Perhaps we're walking here in Portland or any number of streets in any number of cities.
That's right.
And we come across a tree of heaven. Your eyes turn sharply black.
Ugh.
And you foam from your lips. And I say, Casey, first of all, let's get you to a hospital.
Yeah.
And I say also, Casey, tell us about this tree. What do we see? What do we hear? Mm-hmm. What do we smell? Yeah, let's talk tree of heaven.
There's so many different things there that you brought up that are very important about this tree. The first thing is that, of course, you're looking up. It's a tall tree. It's called the tree of heaven, and that comes from the Polynesian word for big tree, or I think it's actually the word for tree of heaven. And then there's another one. Obviously, the specific epithet means altissima, you know, growing upwards, like we said. So, essentially, this tree is a big, gigantic, fast-growing tree. You plant it, and it doesn't take anything to like grow. It will grow. Not only that, if you cut one down and it sprouts back.
Yeah.
I have done this in the winter time, and then the like late winter, like February, March, or something. Cut down a stem, and then it grew back to be taller than me, like 8 or 9 feet tall by the end of that summer.
Whoa.
One single sprout. That's how fast these trees grow.
That's kind of frightening.
Yeah, it's like a bamboo level of speed.
Wow.
And they get big. Like, I've seen some that are like 3 feet in diameter. They are not small trees. Wow. At the base. Again, they grow like gangbusters, like half an inch a year in terms of diameter growth, which is mind-blowingly big. So this thing, this tree, it grows up. It's got alternately arranged leaves. Those leaves are pinnately compound. So they have those lovely feather-like leaves. And they can have up to like 40 different leaflets per leaf and get to be like 3 feet long.
I love a pinnately compound leaf.
But there's so many, and they're so like, they literally are feathery, which everyone loves. Like, they just, you can hold them at the base and kind of go whoosh.
Like as that? If you're fanning a pharaoh.
Yes, exactly.
With they would maybe use a palm frond.
Yeah, exactly. But they're still pinnately compound palms.
That's right.
There you go, most of the time. So the other thing about these trees is that they have these little, on these leaves actually, not the trees, but the leaves, the way you can tell them apart is, A, they look very similar to a black walnut.
They do.
That's the one. Like, biggest mistake is between those two trees.
Yeah.
There's some ways to tell them apart. Mostly, the black walnut only has like 13 leaflets, and it does not get that huge in terms of the leaf. The leaf of the tree of heaven gets massive. Like, it's like 2 to 3 feet long, 40 leaflets going down, and the very bottom sets of leaflets have like little ears at the very base, like one little tooth on this side of the leaflet.
Okay.
All the rest are almost, they have like little tiny hairs on the margin, but they look pretty much entire, you know, smooth margin trees.
These two toothed ones, you're talking the ones right next to the pedicel?
Petiole. Yeah,
petiole.
Exactly. You're
I thought
so
I was
going
to impress you, Casey.
You almost did, but the pedicel, that's the part that hooks onto the fruit.
Oh, shit.
Well done.
See, whoever named these made them too similar. They should be called the petiole and like the gornbunk.
They should, the gornbunk. That's how you get your fruit. Yeah, all right, I'm going to keep that in mind, the gornbunk. As it turns out, Alex, the other thing about these trees is that they have this really cool, like, I would call it diamond-plated bark.
Wow.
It's really smooth. It's kind of gray with a little bit of tan, kind of tan marks in it. But it doesn't get very thick. It just kind of stays really thin, and it has this like long, elongated diamond shapes on it. At least that's how I see it. And once you see it and you can recognize it, it's immediately contrasting to a black walnut, which has that really thick, furrowed bark that's like really dark and, you know, has the big ridges in it and looks like a lot more tough. Looks like an alligator skin, you know. know?
Yeah. Can I make a visual comparison
Please
here?
Please do.
Tree of Heaven bar, you know, like on the back of an asshole's truck.
Uh-huh.
They'll have like that. What is that called? That like that's metal, that shiny metal.
That's
like,
diamond plate.
That's diamond plate.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Then yeah, we're on the same page.
Oh,
I just didn't
that's
know
perfect.
It.
I know, but I love that if two people are like going, they're like seeing the same thing. They just don't know about it,
yeah.
And then they make that connection. This feels good, Alex.
This bark is made of like a toolbox on the back of a truck.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Well, so on top of that, it has these. Little, they're dioecious. I should note that. So they have female and male plants.
Okay.
However, apparently, many times they will switch sexes or have flowers that have both in there. So they're a little bit fluid in terms of that.
Okay.
As most trees are. However, they are so rambunctious in their seeding.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes.
They have these little tiny samaras, which look kind of similar to the samara of the elm tree we talked about. But the only difference is the elm has like, you described it as a flattened eyeball.
Uh-huh.
The samara of the tree of heaven is kind of like an elongated eyeball with like swooshes at the side. Like
yeah.
Almost, I'm trying to imagine what it would be like.
Yeah, they look a bit like little fish or something.
Yeah, like little fish without any fins.
Yeah, little fishies, little sardines.
Exactly,
or
like the little teeny tiny ones that are just like adorable. They haven't developed their adult fins and all those things.
Yeah,
I think it's a good descriptor. So the other thing, Alex, that I want to note about this tree is the flower smells, and I think, where did I see it? Someone noted that it smells like atrocious. Like they describe it as so awful.
One of the Chinese words for this tree.
Yes, that's where I read it. Thank you.
Stinking tree.
Stinking tree.
Yeah.
The other thing that smells really bad, the leaves. Another great contrast between the walnut, the black walnut, and the tree of heaven.
Oh.
You take the leaf of a tree of heaven.
Uh-huh.
You snap it off and you rub the leaves, the leaflet in your hand.
Yes.
You smell your hand. It smells like this weird, nutty, like some people say peanut butter. I say just shitty poop. It just smells awful. I hate it. The black walnut has this gorgeous, like zingy, citrusy smell.
Wow.
It's just like, wow, I really like this. Is like, ooh, you know, like you can almost breathe it in like a sort of aerosol that you want to like ingest.
Okay.
Whereas the tree of heaven, it's almost like you're walking into a rancid peanut butter factory and you're just like, oh my God, when did you clean this equipment? This is bad.
See, I love this ID, this new ID thing you're doing, comparing two different trees that are similar.
It's the best way to tell them apart.
That's great.
This is the way to tell it. Not to mention there's like you could tell the form of the tree, so like the overall morphology
mm-hmm.
of the tree of heaven is very like, it's almost like a tropical warm weather tree, almost like a savanna tree. I see it in actually an example is in the Seattle, I think it's called the Washington Park Zoo up in Seattle.
Yeah,
they have like an Africa, like they kind of go by continents over there.
Oh.
And they have this Africa section, and the Africa section, they have a bunch of trees of heaven.
Oh.
So they left them there. Everyone's like, well, you should get rid of these trees of heaven. They're like, no, it really adds to the aesthetic, where they have like this almost tropical savanna like sort of pillowy, like layered effect where the branches kind of go up and then go off to the side. Then there's another one that goes up and then goes off to the side in a little bit different direction, a little bit higher. So they have that kind of layered, kind of puffy tone to it. Whereas the black walnut and almost every other tree that would have those pinnately compound leaves will always have a much more uniform and circular canopy that's much denser and that would not be quite so like fagoosh, fagoosh, fagoosh with like these layered kind of puffs around it.
Wow.
The black walnut will be one big tree. It looks more like a thundercloud where it's just like a lot of layers, a lot of bumps coming out, but it's one big cohesive unit.
Whereas I was thinking cohesive unit.
Yes. All right. Same page. We're doing it tonight. This
we
is the
are.
Same page.
We had a rough beginning, but we're on
here
now.
Here we go.
Man.
Here we go.
as I interrupt you to tell you that we're on.
Well, so those are that's the big thing with this. And you can see on the dioecious trees, you have the female flowers, mm-hmm. The female trees that will produce all these seeds, and it will be littered with seeds, hundreds and hundreds.
Can we talk about the sheer volume of seeds?
It's insane.
It's kind of stunning.
It really is. It's almost like every single flower produces a seed, and every single seed produces this papery growth from it.
Yeah.
And then each tree at the end of each branch produces thousands of these seeds.
Yeah. It kind of just looks like it has like trash bags all over it.
Yeah.
And these huge bouquets of seeds.
It's even worse because they stay on throughout the winter. Like, they don't all drop all at once like the elms.
Right.
So they will actually sit there and just be like these dead, they're not dead, you know, they're just these dry kind of papery looking things that hang around there.
Yeah.
So all the other leaves will drop. And then because they have these pinnately compound leaves, they will drop the leaflets off of the rachis, that mid-vein section that goes right down the middle.
Rachis?
Yeah, so the rachis is the term for the central leaf part.
Wow.
That grows out.
The rachis.
Yes, R-A-C-H-I-S, I believe. Yeah, so it leaves, like, that rachis will, like, stay on the tree, so it'll have, like, all these weird, like, long spikes with all these, you know, dead paper bag things hanging off.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, it looks a bit ratty, which is something that I think is going to kind of, it's going to be a theme throughout this episode.
I look at that tree of heaven with its garbage bags full of seeds, and I think, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, it's kind of what it is. And like, I think its response is going to be like succeeding.
Wow.
Okay? And you're like, oh, geez, a little bit aggressive about that.
It puts the seed in succeeding.
Oh, Alex, get out of town.
All right. Casey, I have something. I did a little research. Okay.
Tell me about this. What did you get? I love it when you do research.
And I have a source that is not Wikipedia. How about that?
What?
I found it on Wikipedia.
Like, hey, that's a great place to start. That's what Wikipedia is great for.
So there's a paper from 1979 called Ailanthus.
Ah, well said.
By a Chinese author named Xu Ying Hu. Okay.
Oh, okay.
It talks about a bunch of things to do with the Tree of Heaven. And there was one particular little portion that caught my eye.
Yeah.
In the use of the Tree of Heaven root for mental illness, Casey.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, this, give me some of the terms they're using in this, this article here.
The terms?
Yeah. Cause I read through two of them and I love it.
Well, I'm going to read you a recipe. How about that?
For the psychologically unbalanced and the mentally disassociated person.
Yeah.
1979 China at the forefront of political correctness.
And as a psychologically unbalanced person myself.
Hey, I'm psychologically disassociated, so we're good there.
So here's the recipe. This is one of the oldest recipes first recorded in a Materia Medica published in 731 AD. So this is
what?
An extremely old recipe for, you know, if you're feeling a little psychologically unbalanced or mentally disassociated.
Give this a shot.
Here's what you can do. You find a tree of heaven, right?
Okay.
Back in those days, in 731, people, mm-hmm. says the psychologically unbalanced were thought to be possessed by demons.
Okay.
For a mentally dissociated person, gather a handful of fresh root. Cut the material into small pieces and put it into 2 liters of urine gathered from small boys.
We gotta get it from young boys. Good for, well, if you get it from old boys, then it's, what is it? It's too acidic. I don't know what the difference would be.
I think that
there.
Has the reverse effect, so it makes you more psychologically unbalanced.
That's right.
Add 100 centiliters of Tu Shi, which is a material prepared from black soybean, cooked, fermented, salted, and treated with several herbal medicines. This was used as a health food and a spice. Let the mixture stand overnight. Then press the liquid out and bring it to a boil. Divide the liquid into 3 to 5 portions and serve the patient 1 portion each day.
Wow.
You're essentially eating fermented small boy urine juice. Ooh. With root in it.
Oh, man. You know,
And let me tell you,
I'll try it.
There's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it. I had some earlier for the last 3 to 5 days. I am feeling so associated mentally.
I'm feeling psychologically balanced.
Yeah. Yeah, you look good. Wow. I mean, I was trying to tip you over earlier and just couldn't do it.
So, Black Forager, get on it.
Yeah, please.
We have a new recipe for you.
Oh, man. We're going to have to find a good source for the urine.
Yeah.
And are we young boys? Where are we at?
No, Casey, we're all not right. young boys.
So, we're going to have to get some medical doctors to like find out the ethics on that.
I put my sunglasses on and I say, we need to go younger.
Oh, God. You know what's funny about this, what? Alex, is that most everything, it sounds like, you know what the thing is, that clear, like, people have done this.
Sure.
Like, this was a recipe. You don't just like come up with some random thing and then just like write it down. Like, this was done probably for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And then they wrote it down.
Yes.
It was done for hundreds of years after that.
Plenty of trial and error involved.
I wonder if it's still done now. Well, interestingly enough, I'm not so surprised about this because the roots of this tree famously and really allelopathic. Did I say that right?
Allelopathic.
Yes. The black walnut, again, a tree that's often confused with this, vilified, we found out, not quite. This tree, the tree of heaven, vilified, duly so.
Are you saying the black walnut was framed by the tree of heaven?
I think maybe. I think the tree of heaven was like, no, I'm a black walnut.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, okay, black walnuts. And now black walnuts were like, no. Come on. And just don't plant tomatoes underneath me. That's all.
Wow.
There you have it.
Well, Casey, we're going to talk about that and more when we return from this short break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man, I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
Well, the time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized.
Yeah. Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. We hope you enjoyed that short break.
We hope you took your medicine.
Yes, possibly you heard an espresso ad in that time. We're very sorry again.
But if there's anything that can help after listening to that, it's not an espresso. It's a little bit of root fermented in some soybean fermented in some urine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Which we all have sitting in our fridge.
Feel better.
This,
feel better.
Yeah, I think in the recipe it says, this recipe was designed for staples that we all have.
Exactly, yeah. You can find it in your pantry.
Yeah. Casey, before the break, you teased a little bit that the Tree of Heaven is allelopathic.
Yes.
Let us hear more, my friend.
Well, the reason that we wanted to cover this tree, it's another one of those street trees that were introduced, I think, the United States in the 1700s or so.
Mm.
And they were like, this tree's so easy to grow. Just put it in the ground and it grows fast and it has this great form where it kind of comes up and levels out. It's great.
Yeah.
Then that like horticulture novelty of it being so easy to grow everywhere in any way, almost like you don't even have to try. That's the Achilles heel of this tree.
A little bit of a double-edged sword
it's
there.
A little bit of a double-edged sword. So it turns out that this tree follows this really fun descriptor. And I'm just going to read these criteria to you.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me what you think I'm describing now.
Okay.
So a plant that is that has these is what? Lacks predation, pathogens, and diseases to keep the population in check.
Okay.
Produces copious amounts of seeds with high viability of each seed. Uses very successful dispersal mechanisms, for instance, maybe attractive to wildlife, or requires nothing but the breeze.
Yeah.
Thrives on disturbed areas, very opportunistic. It does not need very particular spots to grow. It can just kind of do it anywhere.
Okay.
It is a generalist. It doesn't need a niche. It can just say, yes, give me literally any habitat. I will be fine.
Hmm.
Are you picking up on some of these things?
Is it invasive.
That's the word.
Well, I was not going to say invasive because you didn't mention that it was like that it wasn't growing in its natural habitat.
Yes, I should have added that. That would have been the first. You're right, Alex. Good point. That was the assumption I was working on.
Sure.
Right here, which is there's this thing that I'm reading, which is from the it's the invasive invasive plant atlas of New England is what I found. And really all I was looking for is all these definitions, and it's just like the organs of a tree, where some people say there's like four, there's three, there's six, you know. In this case, they are basically saying what defines an invasive species, like what characteristics do all these invasive species have? And this came up with, I think, a pretty good list. And there's, you know, a couple others, like it's fast growing and demonstrates allelopathy. You know what
allelopathy.
This one says A-L-L-E-L-E-O-pathy. Allelopathy. Pathy.
Wait a moment.
I hate this word. I hate this word, and I want to know who read this. I want to know who wrote it. This is from 2002, so maybe it's just too outdated.
Here's what I want. I want somebody who knows for sure what the correct word is to email us. We'll love you forever. It's driving me nuts.
I can't even handle it. Anyway.
Anyway.
It produces chemicals that inhibit the growth of other things.
Right.
Just leave it at that.
Okay.
It's some kind of a word.
Yeah, it's a real A word, if you know what I mean.
Okay, and then the last bit that they have here is it has a longer photosynthetic period. So essentially, it comes out earlier in the springtime, it stays later in the fall time, and perhaps maybe it can do it during more adverse conditions. So again, kind of a generalist.
Okay, Casey, off the top of your head, can you give me five other invasive species that you know of?
Yes.
Well, either tree or shrub.
Sure, I can give you one. Let's just stick with Oregon or the Great Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
Cheatgrass is a very, very common one over in the east of the state.
The east,
it's
okay.
Not a tree though. The European or English holly. That is a very invasive species here in Oregon.
Yes.
And that is its dispersal mechanism. Again, it's a generalist, and its dispersal mechanism is those little berries that birds love to eat.
Uh-huh.
Technically, no, it's not a poem, is it? I don't think it's a poem. Never mind. I take that back.
What about English ivy?
That was the next one I was going to say.
Okay. I've seen a lot of that, and one of my favorite aesthetics in a tree is a big Douglas fir covered in the English ivy.
Oh, wow.
Which I know, it's okay. Slowly killing it.
Yes.
But everything dies. Get over it.
fair point. If you're down in California, in like the kind of southernish warmer areas around, say, I know everyone's going to hate me when I say this, but around San Francisco, and the reason they're going to hate me is because I said in the southernish area.
Oh.
Everyone's like, Northern California is San Francisco. It's like, it's not. That's like literally the middle of California.
Right. It's southern to us.
Yeah, right. So they have a very big problem with eucalyptus trees.
Okay.
And eucalyptus trees, they have their own eucalyptus, like what we talked about in that episode, their chemicals that they have in their leaves and things like that. And so they help change the soil chemistry as well. So it's not technically the A word, opathy, but it is the trees basically inhibiting the growth of other things in some way.
I see.
Then we also, like, if you're in the eastern United States, kudzu is a big issue down there.
Kudzu.
Yeah, it's this vine that grows up over the top of trees. It's like English ivy over here on steroids.
Wow.
It is absolutely voracious. It's
sounds
crazy.
Cool.
Then in like Missouri, they have a honeysuckle species I've talked about, the barberry up in New England. The red or Japanese barberry up there causes a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just species that kind of just take over.
I gotcha.
And it's fine that they do, but it also causes it's fine if they do in certain situations, and this is something that I've talked about a lot with one of my good friends and coworkers, Dan Gleason, quite often, is that if you are in there's another species, let me take a step back. There's another species that fits this invasive criteria really well. It's not a tree, it's in fact not even a plant. And it's human beings.
Oh.
See what I did there?
So, what a twist.
Wherever the human is, this tree is surely to also exist, sure. At least in like the broadest temperate regions you can imagine. So from Southern California, like literally Los Angeles and San Diego, this tree's growing and it's kicking it. You go all the way up into like super northern sections, way past Seattle, up in Massachusetts. It's growing. It's kicking it. It's loving it.
This is an interesting philosophical question.
Isn't it?
The part of the criteria for an invasive species is that it was put there by human, right?
Or it was somehow introduced, whether the human physically put it there or it came over there because of something else. And this actually, this is kind of where we're going to be going here in a second, Alex. Your question is important because if you add in time to something, isn't nearly everything in some regard an invasive species?
Hmm.
Where historically, let's say there was, I got it, the Bering Strait. That used to be a land bridge because so much of the world's ocean water had been evaporated and was on land in the form of glaciers. So the oceans were so low that there was actually a land bridge between the what is now known as North America and what is now known as Russia.
Right.
So then animals and plants and things, including humans, could cross over and then invade, quote unquote, this new habitat.
That's how the first humans came to North America.
Yeah, exactly. So would we consider those humans invasive? In some sense, yes, you would, because they were not initially in this habitat for literally millions upon millions of years. When they got here, they actually had a huge impact on the native fauna that's here. And this is actually going to be another spoiler because we're going to talk about this in another episode. But there were, I think, something like 60 or 70 species of large mammals, large animals that lived here that went extinct mysteriously at the end of the last ice age.
Hunted,
that's exactly what people are thinking. But then there's also other people who say, no, it was the, you know, the Ice Age. We're going to put a pin in that and talk about that a little while later down the show road.
Okay.
But the weird philosophical question that we're talking about here is, would you consider those very, very first humans, which again, this was 10 to 15,000 years ago, those very first humans would have technically been considered, by our definition, literally right now, an invasive species that came into a habitat that did not have them. They spread across the whole thing, had a really big impact. They set fires. They killed native flora. Mm-hmm. Because they killed native flora, that's having an effect on the native animal populations and how those spread. They have a cascading effect on what those animal populations eat. Then they have an effect on how those trees and plants and grasses and things are moved around in the poop of a giant sloth and things like that.
Yeah.
So the same thing with invasive plants. And this is, Alex, why it would become an issue in our native habitats. And this is why I brought up humans to begin with, is if you're in the forest, doesn't matter which forest it is, let's say it's a second growth, it's just a perfectly pristine forest in whatever regard, anywhere in the northern or anywhere in the United States, let's say, just to give a nice boundary. You go out there and there's all these native trees, the quote unquote native trees, which essentially have been there before, let's say, Western Europeans or Europeans came over and colonized. So pre-Columbus, pre-everybody like that. Let's make the assumption that it's filled with only species that were here before that.
Okay.
Then you bring in an invasive species of plant like the Tree of Heaven. The Tree of Heaven, what makes it invasive and what makes it bad is that it starts to grow up and actually outcompete the other native trees that are around there. And then, because one of our first things, it lacks predators, pathogens, and diseases to help keep the population in check.
Mm.
There's no checks and balances on this tree, while as all the other trees, they maybe have to compete with each other. They have to compete with animals, fungus, disease, all these different things that literally keep a balance in the population, you know, keep one tree from completely dominating, because once it goes completely dominant or there's too many of them, then a disease comes through, kills them all off,
right,
or at least, you know, sends a big shockwave through their population, lowers it.
We've talked diversity in the last episode.
Exactly.
And how important tree diversity is.
This is the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So when these new trees or new species come in and they kind of homogenize the forest or certain sections of the forest, then you end up losing that resistance and that resilience, but also you lose the native habitat that existed there. You lose the native food that supported all these other native creatures that were around there.
Okay.
So creatures as well as other plants and animals, and or plants specifically.
That is a huge butterfly effect from a single tree growing out of the ground.
Exactly. And then because that tree, the tree of heaven, let's say, because that's what we're talking about, mm-hmm. it would then have the A-word chemicals that grow out and start to inhibit the growth of other things around it, except for its own little new brood. So then, because it plants or puts out so many seeds, it gets little seedlings popping up in its wake. And then those create a larger wake and a larger wake. And so you get these little copses of plants that start to take over and actually create their own perfect habitat for themselves.
Mm.
And they actively do that at the expense of all the native flora and fauna that are there. And famously, these trees just don't really create a whole lot of habitat for other things. And this is another big problem where people say, well, if we're going to plant a tree, plant natives. Someone brought up, I think, one time planting an oak tree, because oak trees are famous for having like hundreds and hundreds of species of caterpillars and wasps and things like that that grow on them and in them.
Interesting.
So they have this, like, they're basically one gigantic nursery for like hundreds of different species of insects. Which then, of course, has that other cascading effect of other birds and things that feed on them and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the big reason that people don't like invasive trees is they're like, well, these have no good value for our native things, because our native things don't choose it. They're like, meh, not my favorite thing. And they just go away and they just, you know, they don't, it's just not their food.
Doesn't
so they
do
don't
anything
it.
For them.
Doesn't do it. They're selected against, which is better for the tree. They don't have any pests. So they're just like, I'm doing great. And they just grow up and they're huge.
Yeah.
So all that to say, with the invasiveness of people, you see these trees growing in the city of Portland. And this is the big philosophical thing that Dan and I have kind of discussed a lot, where we have in the city of Portland this nuisance species list. And on that list are any tree that does this similar kind of thing for the same thing as the Tree of Heaven within the city of Portland, or kind of within our area. And on that list is the sycamore maple, the European white birch, the Tree of Heaven, the golden rain tree. There's all sorts of different like species of trees and plants that grow here. Mostly they're all from climates that are really similar to Oregon. But we get these trees, they grow here, and they're invasive, and they cause trouble in the city.
Hmm.
Now, some of these, like the Tree of Heaven, the holly, the English laurel, English ivy, those species will get out into our native forests and cause trouble. Bad. We don't want them.
Okay.
However, if you are already in a place like Portland, which is a highly developed city where there's almost no nativeness that's happened anymore, and I mean that in almost all extents of the word,
yeah.
Maybe the rain, but even that has all the chemicals that come down from all of our development. If that tree is invasive within an already invaded area, who cares?
I see.
That's kind of the big question. It's better to not have a Norway maple growing in the streets of Portland, because it could potentially make seeds that grow into a natural area in the city of Portland. That's the argument. Or then if it gets out further beyond that, we don't want this to be like a sort of contagion spot, then the maple kind of keeps going out. Because if we keep it in the city of Portland, then, oh, someone in Milwaukee is going to do it. Then someone in the Cambie is going to do it. Then it just kind of keeps on getting further and further out, more towards the more rural areas, more towards our native forests. But our argument is that's already happened. That's already going to be here.
That's your argument, too?
Yes.
You're a who-cares invasive kind of guy?
I'm a who-cares, and there's a spectrum. And there's a spectrum of who-caresness, where on one side, you have the Tree of Heaven, you have the English holly, you have, you know, these trees that are like really, really voracious plants, and they will come and take over everything. There's plenty of other species. Almost every city in the United States, every city really in the world, because like we said, there's plenty of species that grow natively in Oregon or the United States that is invasive over in the UK or in France or in Australia or New Zealand, you know, anywhere you want to go. Same thing with animals. However, those trees are really bad. Tree of Heaven. That's on the end of the spectrum. That's like, whenever you see it, cut it down because it's awful.
Yeah.
Because it does all these things. And its roots, like, will break up sidewalk. In fact, what is the book? A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. You know that book? What was her name? I'm going to look this up right now. You give me 30 seconds. A Tree Grows in Brooklyn by Betty Smith, 1943 novel. It's an old famous book, and basically it's talking about, like, the blight that was Brooklyn back then.
Oh.
It's like, but even a tree will grow here, you know?
I see.
The Tree of Heaven is the tree that's growing there. So it's a tree that'll grow in a crack in a sidewalk and, like, get huge in that crack in the sidewalk.
What's at the other end of that spectrum? The ones that you're like, I don't really care about that.
Yeah. The European horse chestnut.
Oh.
Or the Norway maple. Or the sycamore maple.
Okay.
Those are three species that are commonly planted were commonly planted in the city of Portland as a street tree.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those are really tough trees. It's in the nature of being an invasive species. They have very few pests. They're really good at just growing in the worst conditions. They got nice shade they have nice shade over the top, which is good. It's bad if you're planting it in a house, like around a lawn, because they have really dense shade, so nothing really grows underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that they are technically allelopathic, but they might be, but I don't think technically. I think they just have a really dense canopy,
okay,
so nothing grows underneath it. But if there's only sidewalk and cars and streets underneath these trees, who cares?
Hmm.
If there is... if we're planting them in the harshest conditions in the downtowns of these cities, where the heat island effect increases the temperature by 10 degrees and there's nothing but pavement around here and a car hit it in 1979, but the trees just keep on growing, that seems like a really good tree, doesn't it? If you want the toughest thing that's going to last in the harshest place,
right,
that seems like those really kind of awful invasive trees might actually be the one. So on one side of the spectrum, yes, if you let a Norway maple grow, it will produce seeds that are viable, and in a natural area, you might get some Norway maples growing. However, my argument is, how many natural, quote, areas do we have in the city of Portland that haven't been, A, logged already, aren't completely covered in poison or in English ivy, or were created because we wanted to put a canal there? So it's not really a natural area so much as something that we engineered 80 years ago, and now trees have grown over the top of it. And we're like, well, it's a natural thing. It's like, no, that's a pond. Like, Northwest Portland, Alex, was a swamp,
yeah,
literally a gigantic lake, and we just filled it in. So it's kind of like there's just, like, you know, the degree of like better than thou-ness, like, don't plant an invasive species. And it's like, well, look at us, we're in the most developed city in the entire state. There's not really native beautiful land around here anymore in the romantic sense of it. I obviously love my city, but I'm just trying to contrast that to, like, the national forest, or, like, you know, national grasslands, like places that are, like, really, like, very pristine, you know, to a sense.
Can you compare the two, though? Yeah, here's my thing. I agree with you and I disagree with you.
Yeah, go for it.
I agree that, you know, a city, I'm going to take Portland as an example because it's the only place I've ever lived. It's a curated space, right? Everything about this place is fake. We have built everything.
Mm-hmm.
We've built the trees. We've planted trees in certain spaces on purpose.
Yeah.
We don't have any, like, old growth forests in the city, right?
Yeah.
Which would be an example of a place that's never been touched that, well, you can go listen to our old growth forest episode.
Oh, yeah.
I say that because I ran against the wall of the extent of my knowledge about old growth forests, even though I sat there for an hour listening to old growth forest content.
Sure. Yeah.
I think the people who say, who cares, it may be invasive, but so are we, I think that's a little naturalistic for me. I think who cares, I care a bit, because I don't know, if you have a home,
mm-hmm,
and you find a mouse and you follow it into the wall and you find an infestation of mice, your attitude is probably not going to be, oh, life is chaos, whatever. Allow the mice to live in my wall.
Sure, yeah.
you're probably going to be like, well, shit, I pay rent here. I don't like mice crawling all over all of my things. They possibly carry disease and they shit everywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have them removed, however you have mice removed. I don't know. I feel the same way about invasive trees in a city, I think. And maybe I'm on the wrong thread here.
No, keep going.
The look on your face. Maybe I'm reading into the look on your face.
I think you're reading into it.
Am I projecting?
Yeah, okay. I'm just listening here.
Okay. Yeah, I just think, like, you know, yeah, I think keeping invasive species at bay in a city is extremely important. A city is built to, like, move.
Mm-hmm.
And when something, like, gets in your way in the city, you got to, like, I don't know, clean it up, take care of it.
All right. I think that's a very fair argument.
Is that a little evil sounding?
No, I think that what you're leading towards a compromise, I guess.
Yeah,
in,
I
at
reckon.
Least the way I'm seeing it is that okay, let's admit we have these trees, they exist. They're already here. They've already invaded just as much as anything.
Yeah.
But I would suggest, instead of saying, let's get rid of all of them, carte blanche, they're all gone, or who cares, let's all keep them because it's already, you know, a ruined pristine, it's already a paradise fallen kind of idea.
Right.
Where in the middle would be, okay, let's just not plant anymore.
Yeah.
Let's try and keep those, like, no more should be planted. But then where I would say we should focus our efforts would be, let's get rid of the ones that are in the in the natural areas. Work on that.
For sure.
But also not be so purist to think that they're not going to come back, or that all the other things that are growing there, you know, like, not to be so purist to be like, this is a pristine habitat.
Yeah.
You can say, no, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. Let's try and keep it as good as we can without trying to encourage new bad things to come in, these other species. Certain species, tree of heaven, get rid of it at all costs because it is uncontrollable in a exact sense. Whereas the other trees, it's like, well, okay, let's just phase them out slowly, or just not encourage the new growth of them. Don't buy them at nurseries. Don't sell them at nurseries, that kind of thing. If you see one growing in a beautiful natural area, maybe just pull it out. But then if it's the only tree that's growing there, maybe leave it until something else comes. If it's growing on the street, maybe leave it and don't encourage the removal of it, because that tree is doing good stuff. And in the city, Alex, that's actually the question that has come up most often when I'm looking at a beautiful, gorgeous, gigantic tree. It's 3 feet wide. It's shading 3 different houses. It's not causing any trouble whatsoever, and it's a tree of heaven.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, you are providing all the benefits and all the services and all the things that everyone loves. Any person who does not have a discerning eye as to is this a invasive species or a non-invasive species are going to walk by and just be like, oh my God, that tree is stunning.
Yeah. Casey, let's get to our review of the Tree of Heaven.
Ugh, this is going to be such a complicated one.
It doesn't need to be, my friend.
Okay.
Because we're running out of time. Here's how it works. You and I are going to give our final thoughts on the Tree of Heaven and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor.
That's right.
As our resident expert, we're going to begin with you.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give this one right off the bat. I'm just going to just shout it out. It's a 4.1.
Okay.
It's a 4.1. This tree needs to go.
Yeah.
This tree's got to go. Yeah. This tree sucks. And anyone who plants it, you know what my biggest regret is? It's not my biggest regret. One of the things that I regret is where I grew up. There's a bunch of trees of heaven that were just right across the fence line, mm-hmm. essentially. They would pop up in my yard all the time, and I would just go, nom, 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 and I'd pull them out like a whack-a-mole.
Right.
And a while back, after I already knew trees, I could already identify them, like I knew what I was talking about. One of the neighbors who I didn't know, and this is the real crux of it, I'd never even introduced myself, they had planted this big, light, nice garden, and they had taken 3 Tree of Heaven sprouts that someone had pulled up from their yard and planted them in this nice bup, right next to their yard.
Yikes.
And I was just like, oh no, I should recommend a tree that grows that would be really nice. That would be exactly the same tree. And my thought was black walnut. I should just have them plant black walnut real fast. And then I swear I just kept driving by, did that so many times over the years. And now they're like, because they grow so fast, they're like 12 inches thick. They're big trees.
Wow.
And I was just like, Casey, you just should have said something.
Wow, man.
Anyway, we have our regrets. But then I also, the other side of me is arguing like, yeah, well, now you got this really nice, you know, grove of three trees that are shading them on this side of their house. Ultimately, not bad.
You stayed quiet as the regime came to power.
I did. You're exactly right. Anyway, it's a 4.1 because it does do these good things. It has this right idea. It's not its fault that it's so gosh dang good at doing what it does.
Yeah.
But I hate this tree, Alex. Mm. I hate the smell of it. There's going to be a bunch of other people that are going to be like, wait, you gave the calorie pear like 2.0?
Whatever.
This tree at least can get huge. Okay.
What do we say, Case?
We say
your cones are your own.
Cones are your own, Alex. I honestly was going to say that. I was like, don't say it.
I heard you.
You're going to mess it up again. All right. 4.1 for the tree of heaven. The tree of hell.
4.1 golden cones of honor for the tree of hell from Casey Clapp. I want to say that when I said you turned your head as the regime came to power, that was a hyperbolic metaphor I used for humor purposes.
Thank you. I appreciate that you had to explain that.
Here's where I'm at. I'm starting at a 0.0 for the Tree of Heaven.
Whoa.
And I'm going to give it cones depending on its accolades.
I see. Okay. All right. That sounds good.
Here's the problem, though.
Okay.
I think it has but one accolade.
What?
And that is pinnately compound leaves.
So it's got one thing
going
for it.
I love pinnately compound leaves. That earns it one golden cone of honor.
All right.
And that's my rating.
And that's it. Nothing else to it.
It's an awful tree. It's ugly as fuck. It's so mean. It's a bully.
Yeah. Okay.
It is incredibly, it's such a nuisance. I know so many people who are so passionate about Tree of Heaven, and usually when people are passionate about hating a tree, like the calorie pear, I'm like, that's kind of funny. Like,
yeah.
Why do you hate it that much? I get it with the Tree of Heaven. Excuse me. The Tree of Hell.
The Tree of Hell. You know what? We just got to steer into it. 1.0 golden cones of honor.
Yeah, Casey.
Simply stunning. We've hit a new low. That's a 2.8.4.
That's our worst rating yet.
That's our worst rating.
And you can take that to the bank.
Yeah, you can, and deposit it.
I don't want any emails. Casey, that was our review of the Tree of Hell. It's time to move on to a game. Casey.
Yes?
I'm thinking of a tree, and it's up to you to ask questions to decipher what tree I am thinking of. It's a new edition of Who Can It Tree Now? 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 That's the entire theme song, Casey.
That was too good. Alex, you didn't tell me that you had another theme song to sing.
Yeah, no, I like surprising you with these things.
Oh, it makes me so giddy.
All right, Casey, here's how it works. Casey, this is a very special edition of Who Can It Tree Now?
Okay.
Because I have in my hands what? Something that we haven't talked about in a long time.
I can't read that. What does that say?
This says, Casey, this says The Sibley Guide to Trees by Dallin Avid Sibley.
Dallin Avid Sibley. That's his name.
By David Allen Sibley. I am going to flip through the pages of this guide to trees. I will choose a tree. You then have 10 questions to figure out what the tree is. They are yes or no questions. And the information to answer the question must be found on the pages of this tree.
What?
So if I can't find the answer,
oh my God,
then that question is voided and you have to move on to your next one.
Jeez. Okay.
Casey.
Yes.
Please take off your headphones.
Okay.
And cover your ears. The tree in question is the red mulberry. Casey, please return to us.
All right. I'm here.
You have 10 questions. Question number one, please begin.
Is it opposite or alternately arranged leaves?
These are, I believe they are alternately arranged.
Alternately arranged leaves. Are the leaves compound or simple?
They are simple.
Simple leaves. You're not making this easy for me. Thanks, pal.
Mm-mm.
That's two. Okay. Are the margins entire or otherwise? Entire meaning smooth.
Right.
Okay.
They are not entire, I would say.
Ooh. Are they lobed? That's four.
They can be.
They can be lobed.
Yeah, they can be lobed.
Oh my God. Okay, they can be lobed.
Question number five coming up?
Question number five is coming up. Okay.
Who can it tree now, Casey?
Who can it tree? Okay, so they can be lobed.
Yes.
All right, so does this tree have fruit that is edible?
Yes.
Does this tree have leaves that are lobed, or the unlobed, lobed as if it is a little mitten with a thumb, or three lobed?
These leaves can be just a simple leaf.
Okay.
They can have a mitten lobe.
Yeah.
They can have a cat paw lobe.
Yeah.
Or, yes.
Perfect. Is this tree in the mulberry family?
Casey, it is.
Is this tree... Ooh. Okay, what number are we on? I feel like...
Possibly eight.
Okay, all right. I'm going to get this one in a few. Is this tree native to the United States or not? If it's in the David Allen Sibley Guide, I bet you it is.
It is native to the United States, yes.
Is this the red mulberry?
Casey, you have one. Who can it tree now?
Yes! Oh, my God. Alex, I'm so happy that worked out that way.
I love watching you win games.
I'm so excited.
Well done, Casey Clapp.
Oh, my God.
The red mulberry.
The red mulberry. It would not be the white mulberry because that's not native. And the white mulberry was brought in because that is how the silk is made. Not the silk, just silk off of silkworms.
That's great question asking by you.
I have one other thing I want to ask you if you're still on that page.
Yeah, I am.
Is the leaf, the red mulberry leaf should have, should be pubescent, should have little hairs on the leaf.
Yeah, it says usually rough sandpapery above.
Aha, okay, good. Yeah, yeah. So the white mulberry should be smooth. It should be not rough or sandpapery.
Correct.
Yes! That's how I tell them apart.
They're
when I was doing tree
on
ID.
Top. Ah, nice.
Ooh, I feel good. This is my most worrisome game.
Really?
Yeah, because it's so... as soon as you say alternate and... simple, like the sky is the limit. That's like the biggest pot to choose from.
Casey, do you know how low the stakes are?
No, what are you talking about? As soon as I get one wrong, this show's over.
Oh, yeah. Your reputation.
Yeah, the plug's pulled. That's it.
For a bonus point, can you tell me the Latin scientific name?
Yes, Morus rubra.
Killer.
Yes, it is in the mulberry family, Moraceae.
I threw my book across the room and it almost landed on A, my glasses, and B, my laptop.
It was a cool throw, though. I really was like,
thanks.
It felt like that was the end. We did it.
I threw before I looked.
I always do.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q and A.
I'm jazzed right now.
Yeah, well done, my friend.
Thank you.
This week's question is from Angela or Angie Smith. Angie says, hey, you two. I've lived in the Redwood Forest of the Santa Cruz Mountains my whole life, and I have two questions for you. Angie, just for time reasons, we're going to address one of these questions, and so that's the only one I'll read. First, what is a burl? I'm ashamed to admit I'm not entirely sure what a burl is, and why do you make a clock of it and call it live burl?
Yes. I had to look this one up because I was like, live burl? What does that mean?
What is that? And then she says, much love, Angie.
Hey, much love back, Angie. Thanks.
Much love back, Angie. Thank you so much for your question. Casey,
What's
the deal with burls?
Well, so a burl's kind of a weird thing on a tree.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different things. In fact, scientists really don't know for sure. Like, we're just not quite... We don't really get them.
Okay.
We see them all the time. We can look at them and say, okay, we see what this is, but how does it develop? Like, what causes it? Like, what's the deal? But essentially, it is bud tissue that has has just kind of gone awry.
I see.
So I've heard a couple different things. One, it would be a burl is where you have a bud. Like, say a new sprout pops out of the side of a tree and it gets eaten or gets cut off.
Okay.
Then the tree would then react by then putting new buds or popping new buds around that one where it gets injured. It starts to basically, you injure a tree, some trees, boom, they get this injury and they're like, ah, they panic. And all of the latent buds that are underneath the bark around that sprout around the wound, or maybe one or two.
Gotcha.
So that the tree's like, ah, something really bad happened. I'm going to put a new sprout, get a bunch more energy right next to this wound.
So it's a response mechanism to the loss of the bud.
Yes, exactly. But then if that sprout, for whatever reason, doesn't really grow very much, or there's this weird, like maybe it gets too much of the certain hormone and the tree just builds a bunch of new buds, then you start getting this buildup of buds that just kind of pop out and pop out and pop out and pop out. But then they don't all actually pop out and become new stems. So one thing that I read is it's latent bud tissue that just hasn't developed, but for some reason the tree keeps putting more tissue and more buds around there.
Okay.
The way that I've conceptualized it many times is where if you have a and by the way, these can develop for a lot of different reasons. You could have a fungal infection or a bacterial infection that starts it. There's a certain kind of canker that's called a bullseye canker, essentially. And basically the tree, you have this canker that grows, the tree compartmentalizes around it and stops it. The next year, that fungal disease or the bacteria will actually break through that defense wall and then create another layer around that. So you have like infected tissue, and then it's compartmentalized.
Gotcha.
Then you have infected tissue, then it compartmentalizes. And so you get these like these trees that basically build up this weird, like almost looks like two ears on the side of like, you know, a wound. And that's because they're building up new wood to try to cover over the old thing. But each year it goes a little bit further out. So the tree is going like, rah, 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 and just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Wow, okay.
And then other things have been where you have all these buds, or maybe like a bud comes out, you clip it off, and the tree's like, okay, I don't need that anymore. And then it puts on a layer of wood over the top of that. So it's just like any other wound, and you get this little layer, year one.
Okay.
And then maybe the tree responds by putting out a couple other buds around it. It's like, okay, well, I'm still worried. That one, I'm just going to compartmentalize over, but I'm going to pop the rest of these buds because it gets that hormone that starts. So then maybe you now have five buds. You have one in the middle that you cut off, and you have now four around it that the tree is put there in case. Then those pop. Then you clip those off. So on and so forth. And you get every single year, each one of those buds gets covered over by the tree putting on a new layer of wood, because that's what it does every single year.
Okay.
So that cambium is all connected, but now it gets really intense because you have, imagine like little bumps. And then every one of those little bumps has a bunch of other little bumps around it. Every bit of surface area of each one of those bumps is cambium tissue that then the next year would put a new layer of wood on, right? Now imagine all those like chaotic interactions where you have this wood bumping up against this wood, bumping up against this wood, all these little circles, and then have that happen and get bigger and bigger over years, where you just get this like almost cancerous kind of growth that just starts popping off the side of the tree, where you have either a bunch of buds get created for whatever reason and they just don't sprout. The tree just keeps on putting on new buds, new buds, new buds, new buds, new buds. Then each one of those gets new layers of wood on it every single year. You just get this compounding effect of this big massive bulge coming out.
I was, as you were describing this, because I have to do this with everything, I was trying to think of a humanistic analogy.
Oh, of course.
And I thought, you know, I was like, ingrown hair? No, not really. Malignant tumor, not really, but like kind of those things.
I'm it's like, somewhere in there.
I found it.
What'd you get?
It's generational familial trauma.
Where it just compounds and gets worse and worse over time. I think that would be a fairly accurate thing.
I know it's
thing.
A little dark.
Yeah, but if you think about it in terms of a whole population, yeah, I can kind of get there. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I'm talking when the tree itself, the tree, imagine the tree is the family line.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So every year it tries to cover this thing up, but it just gets bigger and bigger.
It causes more trouble along the way for, you know, better or worse.
Creates new buds, new members of the family come into the,
and then they get that trauma. Yeah. Okay. So that's fairly reasonable. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's a good one. That's a deep metaphor. It's a long metaphor.
Yeah. You know,
well, essentially that's what a burl is.
Okay.
And again, scientists, they're having trouble apparently creating one, where scientists love to experiment. So they're like, all right, let's create a burl. And then they would try to create one and they like nick a tree, but then the tree will be like, nah, I'm good. I'm just going to carve over that. Like they just respond in weird ways. So they're unpredictable in a lot of ways. They are predictable in that they usually happen where buds or where the tree would be either putting out a new bud or it had something that happened to it. And then you get this kind of, you know, an unpredictable amount of just haywire that just kind of goes crazy and starts building up a lot of wood around these buds, or a lot of buds with wood that then comes on top of it.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we had a question from somebody who asked what it's something in the tree world that science is kind of out on.
Yeah, that's right.
A burl might be a good example.
A burl is a good example.
What exactly is a burl?
Yeah.
We have a few theories, but nobody's quite nailed it down yet.
Yeah, no one's quite nailed down what they or why they are.
Right.
And, you know, how they grow and, you know, what's the rationale for them.
Right. Thank you so much for your question, Angie. And if you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's ARBORTRARY pod. Or you can join our Patreon and support the podcast for $5 or $10 a month. You get a couple bonus episodes about other related topics, or the Cone of the Month Club, where you get a unique cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist every month. Casey.
So beautiful.
Love that Cone of the Month Club.
Me too. It's my favorite. I got so many cones now.
I'm a little biased.
Yeah, obviously.
Casey. That's been our episode.
That has been the Tree of Heaven.
You know, Casey, this is our 29th episode.
Wow.
And I still don't know how to end them.
Hey, slowly but surely, we're just going to turn the volume down till no one can hear our voices, and then we'll just end it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just fade out from the first second.
Yeah. Yeah. An hour long fade out.
Yeah.
The last 25 minutes, everyone's like, what are they saying? And then as soon as the next show comes on, the volume's
blast
gonna
their ears.
Yeah, maybe we should reevaluate that.
Yeah, we'll figure it out someday. Until then,
we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Completely Arbitrary, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Au revoir. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.